Welcome to the Enneagram 2.0 podcast. I'm Beatrice Chestnut.
And I'm Urano Pais.
And today we are talking about motivation.
Motivation on the Enneagram. And this will be part one or of two parts because we believe we have a lot to say. And we don't want you to need to listen to an episode that would be too long.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about what motivates the types. And in the first episode, we'll talk about the instincts. We'll talk about what motivates people who are self-preservation dominant, social dominant, and sexual or one-to-one dominant. And then we'll also talk about the body types in this episode, types 8, 9, and 1. And then in episode 2 on motivation, we'll talk about the heart types and the head types. So types 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. But we'll really be focusing on the deeper motivation, the why. Why are types doing what they're doing? And of course, this is really the really important level of understanding of the Enneagram types. A lot of people, you know, pay, I think, a little too much attention to the behavioral patterns of the types. And at that level, a lot of types look similar. They do the same things, but the important thing is they're doing them for different reasons. And so it's always important to understand what's motivating people. So that's what we'll talk about in these two episodes.
Yes, and we'll cover mostly what motivates the nine kinds of people and the three dominant instincts from the perspective of personality, meaning that that will happen in all levels of awareness, but starting at the lower levels of awareness, like when we are just acting more unconsciously. And when we say that, it's not that there are people only that are lower level and others that are higher level. There are parts of us who are lower level and are still stuck in that motivational pattern. And when people grow, psycho-spiritually go through growth, they change their motivational patterns. Mostly first, they lose motivation with those old things, the same things. And then they develop new things that motivate them. But we are going to cover more the more basic motivation that drives a little bit our personalities. And as you said, it's super important to know that.
Right. Right. And hopefully it'll be interesting to get a little bit under the surface and find out, you know, what's driving people to do what they do when in personality. Because as you've implied, there's a way that as we grow and develop, our motivations change, of course. So we'll be mainly talking about the personality archetypes, like when people are maybe an average level of awareness or slightly below or slightly above.
Right. And sometimes Enneagram, more basic Enneagram descriptions focus just on the what, like what types do and don't do. But it's important also to focus on the why. So what's behind what they do? And this is, we hope that this episode or this set of two episodes will contribute to answering this question.
Yes.
So let's start, B, and let's start with the three instincts. And let's start with the self-preservation dominant person of all nine types. And I can start saying a few things, but I'm pretty sure you will be able to add more because this is your case. You're a self-pressed dominant.
That's right. So
here's what I see. Self-preservation people feel more motivated by structure, by predictability of some things in life. They feel more motivated when they are feeling safe. And then they can go forward with a project and so forth. When they feel that there is a bigger chance of success, when they think that risks are under control. And also there is a way that engagement with new projects happens slowly for self-pressed dominance or slower than for other dominant instincts. It's like they need to be more gradually convinced of something new. It's too scary most of the time, with differences among the nine types, but it is in general scarier for self-pressed dominance to just change everything, to revolutionize stuff, because, you know, the other name of the self-pressed instinct is conservation. If we used in English the same language that is used in the original in Spanish, that's how they call the instinct, conservación, in Spanish. And, that, you know, there is this motivation that comes from staying with the structure that already exists. And I see in a more practical way, I see that many self-pressed dominants get motivated with tasks that have to do with maintenance, like maintaining their house or doing routines, and they get super motivated. So I could say more and more and more, but we can discuss a little bit. What would you say about all these points and more?
So I do think the self-preservation dominant, and speaking from experience, and here I'm trying to generalize to most of the nine types, but I will say a few things that I think are different. Because remember, we can't say often enough, even though we're talking about what motivates people of three dominant instincts, it's really important not to generalize to all nine. And that's why the subtypes are so important. Because when you talk about the self-preservation one versus two versus four versus eight, they can be different. So some of this is generalization. And then I'll say some things that I think don't go for all types, but maybe most of them. First of all, I think fear is a big motivator for self-preservation dominance. I know it's that way for me, and I've been really noticing that in myself lately, and it's really hard. There are times when I'm like, I need to get over this fear, because often it's what's driving a lot of my decisions, or it's what motivates me in big ways, is being cautious, you know, avoiding situations that I'm afraid of, and that kind of thing. I also think, along with this, you know, caution, being careful, mitigating risk, right? So a little bit like sixes, but not as good as sixes. I notice I'm like calculating what's less risky or more risky. And why would I do something that seems really risky, where the chance of getting the outcome I want isn't high? Like, to me, that I do not feel motivated to do something that's risky. I don't feel motivated to do things for, and this is a self-preservation dominant, because they're exciting, for instance. Now, I think that's something I should change about myself. I actually think it would be better to sometimes be motivated by excitement. But I think it feels like there may be too big a cost, like riding a roller coaster, you know, or doing a dangerous sport. Like, to me, that I'm not motivated to do that at all, because the excitement factor doesn't interest me as much as safety. So I think maintaining safety is another thing that's connected to this. And as you said, structure, like, and stability and security, these are all things that are part of what comes to me when I'm getting motivated or not. And also, I would add a couple things, I wouldn't say this is true for all nine types, but for many types, I would say comfort is also part of the picture. What's comfortable, what's pleasurable, indulgence. Like, for me, that's big. I don't think it's as big, for instance, for like self-preservation three or self-preservation four, but for sevens, nines, twos, maybe some ones, you know, maybe some sixes, maybe some fives. I think there's a sense of wanting also to create order. You know, I moved recently, and where I live is still in disorder, and I need to get rid of some things, and things are in boxes, and it really is deeply unsettling for me. And I notice it affects my state of mind, and like how motivated I am to go do things. I'd rather stay home and get organized, you know? So it's a little bit like that. One thing I would say is I notice there's a way that I question or resist change. So if there's something, and I think you alluded to this, if a change is proposed, if it's like, especially the bigger the change it is, the more I will just automatically resist it or question it. Now, if it's not that big of a change, and if in my head I kind of think about it and I think, well, maybe I need to open up to this because actually maybe it might be a good thing in a way that I'm not seeing right away because my self-praise instinct, which can be very strong at moments, is just saying no. Sometimes I just need a little bit of time to be with it and to think about it and to consider the positives, and I can be more amenable to change. I think this might be there may be some types that are more resistant to change than me, especially self-preservation 9. But overall, I would say what I'm motivated by first when it comes to change is to resist it, to be cautious, to question it. It's an effort to kind of overcome that initial motivation to say, wait, no, that's not going to work.
Yeah, thank you for sharing all of that. That will help me, adapt to you better and be able to persuade you more than I've been able to.
Well, it might be nice to put a little attention into persuading instead of pushing or insulting or criticizing. Not that you do that.
No. But it is super important for me to have someone like you being a complement of things that are not my style, because my self-press is repressed. Now, I would like to add quickly three more things for the motivation for the self-press dominant. One is to have all cost benefit of something mapped out previously, doing that analysis. And another thing is self-care in general. I think that if we leave it as a broad concept and not specific, it could be true that all self-presses go for that in one way or another. And then finally, well-being. You know, it's very weird. I've seen me as a self-press repressed that it's not, my first move to invest in my well-being. I invest in my inner work and sometimes in things that are really hard. But I have a blind spot to just do things that will make me feel better right away. So I think that well-being is a big motivator for self-presses. Yeah. Should we go on and talk about socials?
Yeah.
Should I start or do you want to start?
You can start since you're a social dominant.
Ah, okay. So purpose, vision, mission, causes, higher perspectives, the collective. So I want to say one thing here. I'm pretty sure that Maslow was a self-pressed dominant with social repressed.
Now, you have to explain who Maslow is because some people may not know who you're talking about.
Yeah, you self-preservation can do that for me in a second. And just want to say he was a self-pressed dominant and social repressed because he said that these things that I'm mentioning as my main motivational drives as a social would come only after several other ones. And the first ones would be the ones we've just said for self-pressed dominance. But anyway, who's Maslow B?
Maslow is a psychologist. And way back, I think it was in the 70s, he created this pyramid of needs. And it's interesting because until you doubted him, I sort of thought it was sort of fact. But he has sort of self-survival needs at the bottom of this pyramid. And you kind of go up in different kinds of needs. And at the top is what he called self-actualization. So it's very much, you know, you could see it as a self-preservation pyramid as opposed to the kind of pyramid another person with a different dominant instinct might create.
Right. Yeah. To me, like, I watched a video these days about something that happened in the midst of this very terrible earthquake in Turkey and Syria. And the video showed people saving a whole family with a lot of celebration, with a lot of joint effort. And that was so touching and motivating for me. It's like, that's the kind of thing that moves me way more than anything related to myself. Although right now it's different because I think that as a consequence of working on a few things, I'm way more motivated with things for myself and, you know, even self-care and so forth. But my default motivation is around all of that. And I think that socials are very much connected to cohesion in the group. So when there is harmony, cohesion, when people are at the same page, and especially when there is team spirit, they get really motivated. Like in movies, this is what really makes me like a movie, when there is something like that, and not personal interests, more like the collective. And it's funny also to see, to see that team sports are, you know, call my attention way more than individual sports. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit more like motivation by cooperation than by competition.
So you don't watch much golf?
No, I don't like watching golf. I would perhaps try to play. It's not my sport, but as fun for myself. But no. And it doesn't call my attention when this one person is going for something. What calls my attention is if that one person is going above the previous limits of human beings. So it's still, although it's individual, it's still thinking of the whole race, the whole, collective. Right. And there is more, but what do you see about social dominance?
Yeah, I think you really summed it up. There's probably not too much more I can add to that, but, you know, like making the world a better place, thinking at sort of a large scale level and what can make an impact or what can affect the most people. Now, of course, we've talked sometimes about how the shadow of the social dominant is the savior complex or the God complex, wanting to rescue people. So I think sometimes it can be that kind of thing. There can be when a person's really an ego or not very conscious, there can even be this side of it that's, you know, I have to save this person or that person or the planet or this group of people. There can be a little bit of a wanting to be the hero kind of thing or wanting to make an impact on the collective. But I think I like the ways you said it because it was also very positive, you know, a sense of purpose, a sense of vision, a sense of mission. Social causes. I think this is really important. I've done Enneagram panels where we're highlighting subtype and the things that each person of the different instinct talks about, no matter what type. I remember we were doing a 5 panel and the self-preservation 5s talked all about their home and the place they have in their home to be by themselves and some kind of sort of more immediate concerns that they had individually. And then the social 5 started talking about the causes they belonged to and like the work they did in the world that was connected to causes. So I think like having an impact on groups, but I love what you said about team spirit, when people are kind of working together to get something done and they're more than the sum of their parts. I think that those kind of experiences are very motivating for social dominance.
Yeah, and I want to mention that I do think that these things need to be guaranteed first for us to get motivated with other stuff. And this is for all cases we're mentioning, not the social. Now, I want to add a few last things from my part for the social kind of motivation. Bringing people together. Like, it's also extremely motivating, even for me as a five, to build connections. And I must say, it's even more motivating for me to introduce two people I know, one to the other, than making connections for myself. It's like there is a special pleasure in that. And also doing things for others. I think that I do that a lot, and it's a big pleasure. Like, you know, doing a few special things for someone else. And especially if it's not only one person. You know, doing, you know, giving gifts, perhaps even. Although that is not only for socials. There are different contexts here. But also receiving acknowledgement and praise. More than acknowledgement is like being seen in what we do. That is also motivating for social.
Right. Yeah, like a recognition of a contribution on a larger scale. I think that's very important. And maybe
more the importance, our relevance. You know, I think that's motivating for socials.
Right. Like having an impact that's recognized and validated by others. Now, I have one question because it might be confusing to others. It's a little confusing to me. When you say giving gifts, that sounds more like an individual thing, like something that might be, you know, more of a sexual thing.
But making the other feel special and not that the person will see that I am special. It's a little bit more like a mindset of thinking of the other. As I said, I think it's a good thing for me to elaborate more. I know there is something there, but maybe sometime later in another day, I will be able to explain this better.
I do think that when you give presents or when you receive presents, you're especially motivated when there is some meaning. And you did say meaning, purpose, you know, before when there's like, you're giving something that you've really thought of, something that has meaning in it, sort of a little bit of a larger sense, that kind of thing.
Yes. Okay, so let's move on to sexual dominance. What motivates them?
What motivates sexual dominance?
Intensity, connection with the other person. The fact that you and I build a very special bonding, and that our energies match. The energies are big, and also the fact that there is excitement. People are excited and engaged and going for it with a lot of zest and you know, the willingness to make things happen, and even the competition, I'd say also adrenaline in a way, and a little bit like courage in the sense of an individual that goes break limits and so forth. And also the individual achievement by someone who excels in something, myself or others even, and also, you know, maybe a deep conversation with someone at times, I do think it might be related to the sexual instinct. But not that, you know, it's a good conversation regarding the theme or the learning. It's because of the bond in itself in that deep discussion. And I can say more, but what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. That's what I was thinking too. Intensity of experience, generally in life, but especially in connecting with other people. That sense of getting an adrenaline rush. I think that's very sexual dominant. Doing things for the rush of it, the excitement, the physical intensity, as well as the experience of something special. Also depth of connection, and individuality of connection, like connecting with someone where there's something about those two people coming together. I think you said an energy match or a special bond, you know, that has intensity, that has interest, mutual interest, and that is makes you feel really special, almost like no one could, you know, meet me in the way that you do, or no one can have this experience other than us two. So that a kind of special meaning to a particular kind of connection, and the capacity for depth. And it could be even like choosing to connect with you over other people. You know, it's that little bit of like the triumph of winning out over the competition or the rival. You know, like only you could satisfy me the way that I want to be satisfied. Like that sense of the meaningfulness of particular, specific individual connections.
Yeah, I think this has to do with a willingness for a wish for exclusivity, and yes, also to be special for that other person. And
I also I like the word exclusivity, but also mutuality.
Yeah, good one. And then having time alone with that other person, with nobody else around, you know.
Yeah.
Then also, I do see that for sexual dominance, it's important to have physical proximity, and almost have to sense the person's energy, or even depending on the culture, touch. You know, touch itself might be motivating for sexuals, or the gaze, the eye look between the two, you know, with that intensity and interest and so forth.
Yeah.
Anything that you would add, or should we move on to eights?
Yeah, I think let's move on to eights. Yeah.
So maybe we can start by saying a few things that motivate body types as a whole before talking about eights, nines, and ones very briefly, because okay. Some motivators are more generic for all body types, then we'll talk in the next episode about heart types and head types. So body types in general get motivated by commitment, by people who make themselves accountable, an environment that there is truth, that things are dealt with in a more direct way. And, you know, people who do what they say they will do, or that are sticking to their promises and roles, and also something about loyalty, but also order, you know, some structure also for instinct body types. What would you add, if anything, about the body types?
No, I think that's really complete. Yeah. I think that's a good summary.
Okay, so that's for all eights, nines, and ones. Let's talk about eights. So eights get really motivated by audacity, like being bold and going for things, and not waiting, and being courageous, like confronting what needs to be confronted. People that don't just talk too much and don't do. Also the capacity to take the lead when needed. The transparency is a big motivator for AIDS, but also the fact that other people are trustworthy. They get really motivated by that, and then they can go ahead. And people who don't complain much, or that say that you know, there are many problems, or because they interpret that as weakness. So they like people who are simple, that don't bring them problems with what they may perceive as weakness in the personal level. What would you add?
Yeah, I would say having an impact, moving things forward in the way they think they should be moved forward, like forward momentum, taking action. I think eights are very motivated by when they see the path forward and they're able to go on that path as quickly and decisively as possible. Making quick decisions. I also think they're motivated by challenge, like meeting a challenge, doing the work it takes, or, you know, making things happen in a way that is sort of rising to a challenge that's in front of them. I think those things are very motivating. And I think depending on the subtype, it can vary a little bit. You know, I think social eights, for instance, may be more motivated by protecting others or supporting others or helping other people. Self-preservation eights may be more motivated by, you know, getting needs met, or, you know, finding a sense of security through getting something they need. Sexuals may be more motivated by attracting attention and feeling a sense of power and having an impact or doing something. But generally, I think eights like to sort of feel their energy and their strength deployed in a way that has some sort of positive impact or moves the needle forward in a big way, or makes things happen in a way that satisfies this sense of what they think should happen or how they think things should move.
Right. And I would add, they get specially motivated when there is something hidden and they need to understand what that is and restitute the truth and make justice, you know, out of that. But also, I do see lots of eights being motivated by solving problems, solving issues, and solving them quickly without waiting or procrastination. And just to go against some wrong concepts that some people have about eights, I also think that they are super moved and motivated by unity. When there is harmony in the environment, when people are not in conflict because everybody's doing what needs to be done, they don't mind conflict. But if you talk to many eights, they will say, I don't like it. I want the conflict to be solved. And this is why I confront and I bring things to the table. And but unity, a little more like in the sense of everybody's doing what they need. And if there is a problem, we will be true with each other. Mm-hmm. So people who are in charge and people who are courageous to confront what comes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. One thing I didn't say, but you said that I want to emphasize, is justice and fairness, and sort of bringing that about in when they see instances that of unfairness or injustice, and making sure something happens that they think should happen. And sometimes that's a need to, it's a motivated by feeling a sense of power or control. But sometimes it can be righting a wrong, or like you said, solving a problem. And I totally agree with you. I do not think that eights are motivated by conflict or to create conflicts. I think they're motivated more by having the conflict that needs to happen so that they can move forward, right? So that things can move forward, right? It's like if there's a problem, they're motivated by getting to the problem and doing what it takes to get rid of the problem and take the obstacle out of the way of the path forward. And sometimes that means having a conflict. So I definitely think the motivation is about, you know, getting things right or doing what needs to be done, not the conflict itself. Although there may be a sort of a power element of like, okay, I need to put that person in their place, or I need to make sure that these people, you know, that to tell them what I think or how it should be or have my side prevail. I think that can be part of the motivation, but I don't think it's about stirring up conflict. I think there are other types that probably are more motivated by that than needs.
Right. So I'll start with nines. Nines are super motivated by harmony. They need that. It's like if that is not present, I need to make it happen before I do anything else. And when there is harmony, they just perform more. They're super motivated. And people who are kind with each other, that see each other, and that are considerate. People who are always interested in knowing if the other is okay, knowing if all is good, but not in a long talk about that, but just making sure everybody is okay. Everybody is, you know, at least, minimally happy. And then there is another thing for nines, which is knowing that everybody will have a voice. Everybody will be listened to, giving their opinions and being important somehow, and curious that they don't find it as important or motivating to give their own opinions sometimes, but they do want to guarantee that that happens. They feel motivated by a more democratic environment where people are not imposing. I think it has a lot to do with kindness and respect above all, but it's also about people who are not bossy. They get really demotivated by bossy people, and they start being passive aggressive, but also people who are not aggressive when they are straightforward. They lose motivation when that happens, or people who manage by conflicts and who try to, you know, be too controversial, that's not motivating for nines. But what would you add?
I would say I agree with all you said, creating harmony, and just like, you know, one of my nine friends says, sensing if there's any disturbances in the force, you know, and getting rid of any disturbances in the force. I think, yeah, making sure people are happy or happy enough, finding the path of least resistance, you know, trying to do things the easy way, the comfortable way. And I also think, and again, this is very much the ego thing, and it may be unconscious some of the time, but avoiding conflict is a big motivator, especially personal conflict. So if it's like avoiding any conflicts between the nine and other people that are more personal or direct, and if there's conflict out there around them that isn't directed at them or involving them directly, I think then they can be motivated by helping to resolve the conflict or get rid of the conflict. I think I've noticed in businesses and with leaders, a lot of times it's about creating consensus, you know, getting everyone on board. So sometimes it can be persuading people to go along or go with the flow of what most people want. I sometimes think, and again, this is a little bit of the shadow side, the less conscious side, but I get the sense that sometimes that nines are motivated by a certain kind of devilish satisfaction they get at being stubborn or stubbornly resisting someone they're mad at. Right. Yeah. So instead of expressing anger in any way, it's almost like, okay, that person pissed me off. And I'm going to show them by ignoring them or resisting what they want or not doing what they want me to do. And I do sometimes feel like that's a motivation, because there's something really satisfying about expressing anger in a way that drives people crazy because it's not direct, you know, because it's much more of a passive resistance kind of thing. So sometimes I think going with the flow, you know, which can feel like I'm just going along with people, I'm contributing to the harmony. But other times I think it's they're motivated actually to not be very aware of any disagreement they have or any feelings they have that go against the tide of what's happening.
Right. So I think that connected to what you've just said, I'd say proving someone wrong is motivating for nines, especially someone who has patronized them.
Right. Or been too authoritarian with them, too pushy or manipulative, somehow getting around them, especially if especially motivated to do it in a way that isn't very obvious, you know, that isn't direct, that the person may not even know it's happening at the moment.
But I also mean when someone doubts that they are capable of doing something. This is one of the types that will try to do, you know, do even much more just to prove the other person wrong. And also when there is no time pressure, nines tend to feel more motivated, although smart nines always use time pressure to be able to deliver, you know, but that's, you know, they need to force that onto their own personalities. Order, routine are sometimes things that help the nine be more productive right next. And being available when others need and being helpful. But I like that you mentioned feeling comfortable. And I'd say that comfort is also something motivating for nines.
Yeah, definitely comfort.
Yeah. So last, let's talk about ones and what motivates them. I think that, you know, when they do the right thing and when they see others doing the right thing, it's also motivating, but I think they get more motivated when they know that they did their best, that they made a lot of effort, or that they did what was right. And and also not only from the perspective of the perfectionism, right, in that sense, it's also as in the noble thing to do. I think that that's very motivating for them. Another thing for ones is order and, you know, avoiding chaos and, you know, clarity is very motivating for ones. And things that don't, people that don't beat around the bush or that don't, you know, just talk and don't do, or that are too complex in what they say and lose practicity and pragmatism or don't implement stuff. So this is very demotivating for ones, but especially people who don't walk the talk or that don't follow up with promises. But I think that what really motivates ones is a good job done, you know, accomplished in a way that it's not only about the delivery, it's about that satisfaction that this job had quality. But what would you add?
Yeah, I definitely say quality for sure. And that sense of like working to make something perfect. Like I think ones get a huge satisfaction if they can do something in a way that it ends up, you know, they end up making something exactly the way they imagined it in its ideal state. You know, so I have a friend who's a one and he'll often say like, oh, it, you know, trying to make it more perfect, trying to have it achieve that vision they have in their mind of what perfect looks like, trying to make it that way. And because there's this huge rush of satisfaction, I think, that comes for ones when they achieve what they wanted to achieve in terms of the high quality outcome. Of course, that doesn't happen all the time. It can be rare sometimes when it gets just right. But yeah, making things better, making things right, correcting errors in things, improving anything. They always see how it could be better or more improved. And when they take action to make it that way and they achieve that, I think that's one of the most central motivators. I think in general, kind of making the world a better place, like making a contribution that has a positive impact on their life, on other people's lives, on society. I think they often have this sense of the right thing, and so contributing in some way, whether it's work or resources or expressing an opinion, it's how to put their view of what is right or better or improved out there and make that happen through their action or their activity or how they express themselves in the world.
Yeah, you mentioned two things that I was going to emphasize. So continuous improvement and correcting mistakes and errors. But I have two more things. People who understand what they did wrong, what these people did wrong. Like I get that. And they really get it. But also not only what they did wrong, people who get it in a more general sense. Like they understand things when they are explained and we don't need to come back and back and back. Because ones can look patient, but being patient in the inside, and they are judgmental. Like, why isn't this person getting it, right? So I think this is also motivating for ones.
Yeah, and I think a slight twist on that and what you're saying is holding people accountable or creating conditions where people are held accountable or people hold themselves accountable. I think that's a big one. And of course, you said it, but I just want to emphasize it. Creating order, creating stability in systems, creating a sense of, order out of chaos, or making sure structures are in place, processes are in place that allow for orderly things to happen in an orderly way.
Right. And I'd say consistency motivates ones, like the quality, the content, and not image or bragging around.
Right. So right. Yeah. The substance, not just the image. Yeah.
Right.
I think ones would also say solving problems. They're probably a different angle on problem solving. I think I hear like head types and eights talk about problem solving, threes, but ones I think also like, tackling problems and fixing things.
Yeah, and I think that move on and not wasting time in a way to do things that are needed,
But, and I also think ethics and, not all ones say they follow the rules. Sometimes they say they evaluate a rule or they follow their own rules. But I think being ethical, reliable, supporting the social compact in terms of correct behavior that allows people to get along better and live together in more harmony.
Good, B. So I think that makes it for part one. On part two, next in 2 weeks' time, we'll talk about heart types and head types and motivational patterns.
So that does it for this conversation, and that means it's time for our top five. So let's move on to that.
Yeah, and what's our top five today, B?
Today, our top five is the top five most self-motivated types. Types that don't need any much outside them to motivate them, but get a lot motivated from inside.
Right. This is a good topic. So my number five is nine. I think that nines don't need external, push to feel motivated to do things. They find it usually, you know, in the inside, unless that's something for themselves. But it's like they don't need other people to sort of to praise them in what they do or not do, to start doing things. And I think they can be reasonably self-motivated. So they are my number five, certainly not my number one.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
What is your fifth?
My fifth is two. I think twos are often motivated by other people or what other people want them to do. But I also think that twos can be pretty active and driven. I think sometimes twos that are very driven and self-motivated get called threes when they're actually twos. So I think twos, you know, and I know it for me, that's that way. Like we see things that need to be done, like to stay active and like the feeling of doing things. And so I put two as my five. It's not number one, but number five.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. My number four is type one. I think that ones have this drive to, you know, to do things. They don't need external approval, motivation as much. They keep on track, and they are really constant, and they find motivation to do something within themselves when it has to do with quality and all the things that we said just a while ago when talking about motivation. Now, I also think that ones are not the ones that are the most self-motivated, because they get too resentful when people around them are not doing according to what they think is right. Unless the one is a social one and will then try to model the right way for other people, I think that you know, they can lose a little bit of the motivation and even try to punish other people by doing something else. But yeah, my number four.
Interesting. Okay, we'll talk more about that in a minute. Yes. My number four is six. And I think sixes are pretty self-motivated. And part of that, of course, is because they're motivated a lot by fear. And fear is, I think, a good self-motivator. But they, you know, tend to have their own agenda. They tend to be, you know, very active in doing what they do for reasons that are generated internally. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Yeah. And I also want to say that I believe there is more than one concept of what self-motivation is. But well, my third in the rank is type three. I think that threes find the energy within themselves, even when they are tired, or that thing about persistence and believing and, you know, not giving up. And unless they really see that there isn't any more chance for success. But they are very self-motivated to keep working. But it's not self-motivated in terms of not needing other people to approve them. They do need that. And they need other people to see that they are successful. But to me, I was talking more about the self-motivation as in finding the energy inside myself to keep going, you know. Mm-hmm. So three is my third. What is yours?
Interesting. My third is eight. And I think eights are very self-motivated. When they see something that needs to happen, they go into action. And I think you're right. I think we could have a longer conversation about what it means to be self-motivated, and we may be defining things slightly differently. I think everyone is, you know, motivated from a mix of factors outside themselves and inside themselves. But yeah, I agree. I think it's about finding the energy and the reason inside to keep going or keep doing things or keep stay motivated. And I think eights, you know, they have a lot of inner drive to get things done, to meet challenges, to be decisive, to move things forward, to take action, to work hard. And so eights, as I'm talking, they could be a little higher, but you'll see what I put in the second and first place. But eights, I have at number three.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this is why eight is in my second place. And I think they are also stubborn in making things happen, especially if other people don't believe that. And they try to move people forward so that they believe in that too. And just like, never, ever give up, or, you know, go ahead. And, you know, I very much that I like football or soccer, as you guys say in the U.S., and yes, there was he's still alive, but he's not a manager or coach anymore. Alex Ferguson, one of the most famous coaches for Manchester United many, many years ago. I see him as an eight, probably even self-press eight. And he would talk all the time about self-motivation and how he admired very few players that had played for him because those were self-motivated. And he talked a lot, and he gave lectures, speeches about that. And I think he was actually describing who eights are. You know, he was willing to see more eights around him. And I think that for all these reasons, eights are my second. Mm-hmm. What is your second?
My second is three. And, you know, for the reasons you said, plus I think, you know, threes just try to stop them from doing something. You know, I think they find a lot of motivation to keep going, to get things done, to move forward, to work, to, you know, be on top of things. I just think there's so much drive inside them to keep going and so much inner motivation that, although, of course, part of what motivates a three in a larger sense is, you know, having an image that pleases the outside world, I think one of the main strategy they use to get there is accomplishing things, and that you can, it's even hard to stop them from being self-motivated, that they're so self-motivated. So I have threes in my second spot.
Mm-hmm. My first is seven. I see sevens as becoming motivated even with things that are boring for them because of reframing and rationalization. I think that feeling motivated is such a central thing for sevens, like feeling happy with what I'm doing, finding pleasure, but more than that, feeling some adrenaline with what I'm doing, like enthusiasm, excitement, and that has to do with motivation. And sevens can't bear seeing people who are not motivated. They ask themselves, what's happening with this person that they can't stand up and go do and feel like I feel, you know, positive. And then I also think that they don't depend on other people to feel like that. It's an inner evaluation of what they like. And because they always go for what they like, and they make sure that they have, you know, leisure, or that they find pleasure at work or in what they need to do, I think they are always being not only positive but motivated with what they do. So this is my number one, and I've just before we had this recording for the podcast, I was just talking with a business leader who's a seven. And she used also the expression self-motivation like many times during my talk with her. And I've seen that from many, many sevens in my life.
Yeah, you've definitely convinced me I should have had seven in my top five, which I didn't, which is interesting. But I do think that sevens put the self in self-motivation, right? So from that point of view, I especially agree with you. I guess I was thinking, like, you know, when I've heard sevens, there are certain things they really don't want to do. So I haven't really seen them be self-motivated, for instance, to get through a tedious task or something they think is boring. I see them lose all motivation when that happens, but I think you've, I think you've convinced me. So I think they're just, I agree that they're very good at motivating themselves by like, you know, creating a positive vision of what they want to do or achieve. But yeah, for some reason, I didn't put them in my top five, but I agree. You make good points. In my number one slot, I have one, type one. Yeah. And this is because I just think they are so driven by their image of quality or making things better or perfect that it's a very strong drive. I've also, what came to my mind is ones are the only people I know who, like, whether it's in school for assignments or work product, they sometimes get things done early, right? Right? Like that would never happen to me. Like I'm starting to realize that my two bias of my own self-interest put me in the top five, and I would take myself out. I would maybe two should be, because I can be self-motivated, but sometimes I can lose all motivation. Whereas I think ones, it's almost like they don't let themselves not be self-motivated, even though I think it requires a big effort. And I guess I don't see, I mean, I think you made a good point, but I don't see them losing self-motivation by being resentful of others. I do see them judging others or thinking other people aren't as self-motivated as they are and wishing they were, but I don't see their resentment or slowing them down or making them lose their self-motivation. But I'm sure in some circumstances that probably happens, but I didn't consider that in my ranking. So that does it for our top five and this episode. We want to thank you for joining us and listening to our Enneagram 2.0 podcast. Please join us again next time when we talk about, once again, all things Enneagram.